Welcome to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, the show where brilliant professionals share how to sharpen the universal skills required to flourish at work. Enjoy more career fun, wins, meaning, and money with your host, Pete Mikitas.
Hello, and thanks for joining us here for episode 443 of the Peter Ludwig. Peter is sharing his expertise when it comes to conquering procrastination. So you'll learn, one, Peter's recipe for finding willpower in the moment, two, how to find your ongoing motivation, and three, why you should rest before you get tired. So if you want to check out the show notes or the transcript or the links to items that we've referenced, you'll find it over at awesomeatyourjob.com/EP443. That's awesomeatyourjob.com/EP443. Now, here's Peter's story. Peter Ludwig is a science popularizer, entrepreneur, and consultant for Fortune 500 companies. He's the author of the best-selling book, The End of Procrastination, a book dedicated to overcoming the habit of putting off tasks and responsibilities. His book has been translated into more than 10 languages and sold hundreds of thousands of copies globally. Peter is the founder and CEO of the company Procrastination.com, which applies the latest scientific findings in neuroscience and behavioral economics to help individuals and companies in their sustainable growth. His core fields of interest are a purpose at work, values-based leadership, and critical thinking. So thanks to Peter for hanging out with us, and thanks to our sponsors. Check them out. One sponsor to check out is Storyworth, who's offering $10 off your first purchase at storyworth.com/awesome. Whenever I'm thinking about meaningful Mother's Day gifts, Storyworth leaps to mind. Storyworth is an online service that makes it fun and easy to write an entire book of life memories and preserve them for years to come. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved ones a single life-related question that you pick from their collection, like, what's the bravest thing you've ever done? I have personally loved their prompts so much that I have refreshed their questions page many times. All they have to do is reply with their story. After a year, Storyworth compiles those stories, memories, and even photos into a beautiful hardcover book to provide a valued keepsake. Families love Storyworth so much, they've got 25,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot with millions of stories preserved. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years, Storyworth. And right now, you can save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/awesome. That's storyworth.com/awesome for $10 off your first purchase. Here is Peter. Peter, thanks so much for joining us here on the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast.
Hi, Pete. Happy to be here.
Well, I'm happy to chat with you. And I'm so fascinated by your story. You have studied a whole host of scientific, social, psychological things, and you decided to pour a lot of your energies into the study of procrastination. Why this topic, and is it coming from experience here?
For me, the topic of procrastination is one of the most important these days, because we live in the world full of distractions, social media, and it's quite challenging to find a way how to stay focused on what is important. So for me, topic of procrastination is getting more and more important these days. And there's a lot of good data and a lot of scientific studies about how to really decrease your procrastination. So my life mission is to just transform what science knows into what people do in their normal lives.
Well, that's an awesome mission, and so important and helpful, because there's so much great knowledge out there, and it's great to make sure that folks actually see it instead of the researcher and the researcher's mom in the academic journal.
Exactly.
Well, I'd love to know, Peter, what are some things that you procrastinate on?
Oh, I still have some things that I procrastinate. For example, if I have to sign an important contract. For example, I have a lot of contracts for translations of my books, so I have to sign them. I have a good lawyer, but still I want to read them before. So those are things I procrastinate, things that are important, but quite challenging and difficult to me.
So tell me, as you've done your research associated with procrastination and your book in particular, The End of Procrastination, which is now available in English, thank you. Translators and lawyer and contract for that coming together. What's maybe the most surprising or fascinating thing that you discovered in digging into some of the research and studies behind this?
Right. There is a huge meta-analysis about all the research on procrastination and the outcomes.
That's convenient.
That's a good beginning where to start when you do any kind of research to read meta-analysis, because someone did a good job before. So, for example, if you want to know some research about longevity, you can use Google Scholar and just try to find longevity and meta-analysis, and you will find very good sources. So that's my hack, to start to read a meta-analysis. And the biggest meta-analysis about procrastination shows us that the main cause of procrastination is a lack of self-regulation. Self-regulation means that you have your emotional part and then you have your rational part. And if you are unable to resist temptation, your emotional part is going to win. And it means that you go to check your Facebook, you want to, I don't know, overeat, you want to watch Netflix and so on. But if you have good willpower and your rational brain is stronger, your willpower is stronger, then you can self-regulate. Even if you have a temptation to do something, you are able to resist. So that's the core of procrastination, to really train your willpower part of the brain.
All right. Well, so that sounds sensible. How do we go about doing that?
Well, there are a lot of techniques for that. My favorite one is when you do daily habits. For example, if you do 20 push-ups daily, not even your muscles grow, but even your part of the brain that is called prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain that is for willpower, it grows too. So that's very good news that procrastination is not something that is inborn, but you can really train your willpower as a muscle. So by doing 20 push-ups daily, you really can train your willpower.
Well, that's really cool. And so then I'm curious, is it push-ups? Is it sort of strength training in particular that boosts the willpower? Or would running do the same thing? Or
All exercises do the same, but what is important is to do something daily. You can have your favorite, like, 5-minute routine of, I don't know, it doesn't need to be push-ups, but 5 minutes daily can really boost your willpower. And we have one willpower for all domains. So you can train your willpower by exercise, and then you have stronger willpower even in your work.
Okay, great. So exercise is a key way to increase your ability to have willpower. What are some of the other means of increasing it?
Another one is some mindfulness, like to do a simple 5 to 10 minutes meditations. There is a great app for that. You probably heard about app Headspace, or there is another app that is called Simple Habit. Headspace is for 10 minutes, Simple Habit is, they have 5 minutes meditations. And those 5 to 10 minutes of really focusing on doing nothing, that is mindfulness, focusing on your breath, counting something, that can really increase your willpower too. So my advice is to do, I don't know, 5-minute exercise in the morning, and then to do mindfulness meditation in the afternoon, and all those exercises together, they took only a few minutes, but can really improve your everyday willpower and productivity.
Well, and so I'm curious, since you're a science popularizer and lover, I might be able to get into some of the depth with you, because, you know, sometimes I'm fascinated too by research studies, and I pull up academic journals, and sometimes the thing that gets me is, it's like, okay, you've shown us, sure enough, that there is a statistically significant difference with your intervention. So nice job, researchers. That's something, you know, but I also want to know, but how big is this difference? Like, am I going to be, you know, 1% better at willpower if I do my push-ups and my mindfulness? Or is it like double, triple? Like, do you have a sense for how much quantitatively of an improvement we'd see with these interventions?
Oh, well, that's the great question. My experience is that I have only some anecdotal evidences of my clients, because it's very difficult to, if you read those meta-analyses, to see how big was the difference at the end. Yeah? So that's a very good question. But with my clients, I can see the huge difference. Like, if they really start to train their willpower, let's say in 3-4 weeks, they are much, much better in their productivity. So it's quite difficult to measure it. But if I ask them what is their improvement, they feel significant improvement. They are telling me that they can do, like, I don't know, 2 times more tasks daily or something like that.
Oh, there you go. Two times more tasks daily sounds enticing. All right. So it's a measure of doing some physical exercise as well as some mindfulness. Are there any other key ways we should go about building our willpower?
There is a beautiful study that our willpower is also dependent on simple sugars in our blood. So eat fruits and vegetables daily can really boost your willpower too. So to drink, for example, a glass of red juice or to eat, I don't know, 2-3 apples can really boost your willpower too. So, and another example is to go for a walk, because if you are sitting all day, then your brain is stuck and you need to boost your cardiovascular system. So 5 minutes or 10 minutes a walk can really improve the willpower too. So my advice is to do a simple, short exercise in the morning, then to eat fruits and vegetables during the day, then to have walks regularly, for example, work for 2 hours, then have a walk, and then work for another 2 hours, and then have another walk. And then do a simple meditation in the evening, and you can really double your performance.
Okay, that's really cool. So these are great things to do on an ongoing basis to keep your willpower strong and in great shape. What are some of your pro tips for when you're in the heat of battle, if you will, and there's this thing, you know you should do it, but you sure don't want to do it. You're right there, right now. How do you find the power?
Oh, right. For me, I go somewhere without internet connection. For example, I have my favorite tea room that I was writing my book, and they don't have internet connection there. So it helped me to really start with something. And what is really good is to set a proper time for starting. For example, if you are postponing to send, I don't know, an important email, you should set a proper time, like, okay, I will start at 8 a.m. and you can use apps that can block your internet connection. For Apple, the name is Freedom, so you can really block your internet connection. And for Windows, it is called Turkey. And those apps can help you a lot if you block your internet connection.
Okay, that's handy. So you set a time, you block the internet connection. You've got a tool called the Heroism Tool in your book.
Oh, right, yeah.
What's this about?
This tool is from Professor Philip Zimbardo, who's famous about his Stanford Prison experiment, still slightly a controversial one. And when I met Zimbardo for the first time, I asked him what is his personal tip for fighting procrastination. And he did something that was quite strange to me. He took my black marker and he put a big black dot on his forehead. And I was like, what? And Zimbardo told me that if you put a black big dot on your forehead and you go, for example, shopping or you go by bus somewhere, you start to get used to strange feelings that you have, that you are different. Mm-hmm. And you are then able to overcome your social comfort zone. And he really described me that we have two kinds of comfort zone. First is physical one. It's much more obvious. It's, for example, the bed in the morning. It's a physical comfort zone, or the situation when you are, for example, sitting in your car. But then we have a social comfort zone, and that means that you are part of the crowd. You are in a herd. And to overcome that is very important, even for fighting procrastination, because often we are unable to act in the right moment. So Zimbardo told me that if you do this little training with the black dot on your forehead, then you are capable of overcome the comfort zone even in different scenarios. For example, if you go next to accident, you are then much more able to stop and help, or you are able to say your opinion if someone else is quiet, and so on. So Zimbardo calls this little heroism. Those little heroic acts can really boost your ability to be the one who really do something when the situation is important. So for me, this tool is one of the core of my book. And Japanese samurais, they had a rule that if you are in a situation that you really need to act, you probably heard about that, it's a rule of three heartbeats. You really have to act in three heartbeats, like 3, 2, 1, and then act. Because, for example, if you are driving and you see accident, you really have those 3 seconds to stop and help there. If you don't do that, you probably go away. It's much easier to find excuses to not to do that.
You know, I think I heard about this, except it was on a reality TV show about pickup artists. the 3 second rule, in terms of that, in this context, it was guys who are going to approach a lady and like start talking to her.
Okay, I think this concept.
Yeah,
stopping next to accident is maybe a little bit more important.
Oh, absolutely, yes. But I think it gets to the same notion that the hesitation, fear, sort of overthinking it, just gets in your way.
Yeah, overthinking is a real problem. Like, we have a data. More you overthink, more you procrastinate. So fighting overthinking, like, and we have a beautiful data that more you are intelligent and more you are creative, then you procrastinate even more.
That's my problem, Peter.
Yeah, because you are capable of coming up with very good excuses and excuses in front of yourself. So you use your creativity and your intelligence against yourself. And that's the problem. Like, overthinking is very, very, very usual problem of intelligent people.
That's interesting. So I'm curious then, if when we talk about maybe some of the fear elements, you know, mm-hmm. I guess, and sometimes it's like a very quick, short time that you can respond to something. And other times it's maybe not so urgent, but you're maybe, I'm thinking about salespeople right now. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, you know what? I got to make some calls, but I'm resistant because right. I think they're going to be angry at me and that's not pleasant. And it's not like you're terrified of it, but it's not fun. And so there's maybe some anxiety or fear or trepidation associated with it. So I guess not overthinking it and just jumping in is one strategy. Are there any other, you know, things you'd recommend in these contexts?
Yeah, I do trainings for salespeople, and what works very well for them are daily routines. Like, for example, if you have to do some cold calls, you should set a very low bar, for example, to do 3 calls, but do there daily. And if you set up a routine and you do that, those 3 calls daily, then it's much easier to do more. So science calls this micro habits. What is important is not the quantity, but what is important is that you really stick to the habit daily. And if you do that and you repeat it like 5 to 10 times, then it's much easier to start. So my advice to salespeople is to set the proper time. For example, as I said, like 8 a.m., I will start with calls, and I do 3 calls. And then what is very good, we have a tool that is called Habit List. You have a table and you fill in each day the table, and you see that you really pass the goal. So set the bar to the lowest and repeat it. And after you have that habit, you can increase the quantity. And at the end, you can do, I don't know, 15 calls daily.
Okay, so with this Habit List table, I guess the rows would be habits, and then the columns would be sort of days, and you
right,
would want
exactly.
to fill it up kind of Ben yep. Franklin style or Jerry yep, Seinfeld
exactly.
joke style to say, hey, keep the chain going day after day after day.
Yep. This tool is one of my favorite one. I use it every day. And for example, I have a row that is called cold shower. Another row is, I don't know, to do those morning exercise. Another row can be, I don't know, read or write a few pages and so on. But the core of this tool is that if you visualize the outcomes, like you put a green dot if you pass it and a red dot if you don't, you see the visual feedback of it. So you have a table, and at the end you see how good you are in those habits. And if you see that you are failing, you have many days red in a row, it means that your bar is too high, or you don't have intrinsic motivation to do those things. So those are only two situations, like you have lack of motivation or the bar is too high. So you can fix both. Like, you can ask why you want to do that habit, and you can increase your motivation, or you can decrease the bar. For example, if you are unable to write 5 pages daily as an author, then you should start with 2 paragraphs. There is always a lower bar.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that that's kind of inspiring. Even though you're talking about lowering the bar, there's always a lower bar is kind of inspiring to me.
Yeah, I did it. When I was writing the book, The End of Procrastination, that's funny because I was procrastinating that. So I was procrastinating writing the book about procrastination. And the final solution was really to write 2 paragraphs daily. And everyone can write 2 paragraphs daily. And if you do that, then you are able to write even more paragraphs. And to really start with lower bar is the key of fighting procrastination to me.
I really appreciated that perspective. And we had Dr. BJ Fogg on the show earlier talking about tiny habits and motivation. Mm-hmm. And making it small is very helpful in terms of making that happen. So let's talk about the motivation piece for a moment. How do we get more of that?
The first part of the book is about motivation, because I think that if you have the right motivation, then you don't need willpower at all. So it's much more important to find right motivation than to boost willpower.
Oh, we should have started there. Okay. We'll
For
continue.
Example, yeah, I don't need to push myself to do talks because I really love to do talks. So it's much more important to me to do things that I don't need to push myself to. So, and the core of motivation that I'm trying to cover in my book is that basically we have 3 kinds of motivation. First one is extrinsic motivation, and there is another huge meta-analysis about motivation, and it seems that extrinsic motivation doesn't work at all. It worked for manual activities, but it doesn't work for activities that you need your brain. So it doesn't work for creative and cognitive tasks. So then we have intrinsic motivation. But I cover 2 kinds of intrinsic motivation. One is focusing on goals, like intrinsic motivation by goals. And that's the thing that people are setting goals in their private life. And this can really backfire, because I had a client and he had that kind of goal board, and he had there his car he wants to buy, the ideal flat he wants to have. And he got depressed because he didn't have any of that. So the problem, of course, is that if you are focusing on something in the future, you are less happy in the present, because you are still missing the goal. And the second backfire moment is, if you reach the goal, the happiness is very short term. Psychology calls this hedonic adaptation. So even if you reach the highest goal, like you win a Nobel Prize or you win an Olympic gold medal, you are happy just few days, maybe 1 week, not more. So focusing on goals can make you addictive, because we call those people goal junkies. Those are people that they are setting higher and higher goals, but they are not happy in the present moment. And if they reach the goal, they experience only short-term happiness, but then they need another goal. It's quite similar these days on social media. Like, for example, if you have 10,000 followers, you feel, okay, I need 100,000. And then you have 100,000 followers. Well, then you need 1 million followers, and so on. So more you have, more you want. So, and it leads not to happiness, but to addiction. So,
well, yeah, that's a bummer. So what's the superior alternative?
Okay, we call it journey-based intrinsic motivation. And it's based on very old but very important saying that the path is the destination. So what is much more important than to focusing on goals is to focusing on activities that are enjoyable for you and you see purpose of them. And how to find those activities? I have a simple tool for that, and it's based on a Japanese concept of Ikigai. Ikigai is a Japanese word from island of Okinawa. It's my favorite island. And Okinawa is famous for the fact that they have the longest lifespan around the globe. So they really live to their 100. And they made a long-term study, what is the reason of longevity at Okinawa, in Okinawa. And the outcome was really the concept of Ikigai. And it can be translated as a strong sense of purpose. And Japanese, they describe Ikigai as a connection between four parts. First part is to do things that you are good at. So strengths are very important. Second part of Ikigai is doing things that you really enjoy. So positive emotions are very important. Psychology calls this state of flow. You do something and time stops for you and you are in the present moment. And the third part of Ikigai is the most important to me, and it's doing something that is greater than you, doing something that helps the society, helps the others. So selfless acts are important too, not to be just selfish. And the fourth part is to do things that you can get paid for. So money is important, but not that much. What is much more important is to use your strengths daily and to focus on meaning and purpose.
And so the premise was that they're living so long because a large proportion of their activities check one or more of these four boxes?
Right. And if you find something that is interconnected, like, for example, for me, if I do a talk, it's very important to me in terms of it has purpose because it can help a lot of people, then I really enjoy doing that. I can improve it, so I can improve my skills. So more better I am with my presentation skills, happier I am with the process. And of course, I can get paid for that. So if you find something that is interconnected, you have less stress hormone cortisol that is killing us slowly. So that's maybe one of the reasons why people, if they have more purpose, they live much longer. And the data shows us that people with more purpose, they have less risk of cardiovascular diseases, less risk of strokes, and so on. So it can really prolong your life.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Huh. Very cool.
Well, and so I want to make sure we also cover, when it comes to just sort of the organization of tasks and time in the day in, day out, I understand you've got some perspectives on how we can do that better so we can achieve more before we get tired.
Right. The key of productivity is to have a regular rest. So, for example, workaholics are procrastinators too, but they are procrastinators of having a rest. So it means that if you are working like 12 hours in a row without rest, the quality of your work is very, very low. But if you work 1 hour and then you have a rest and then you work another hour, your productivity is much, much higher. So regular rest is important, and to have a rest even before you are tired is very important, because if you are tired, you don't have willpower to go for a walk. So you should go for a walk before you are tired, and you should drink that fresh juice before you are exhausted, and so on. So it's on like preventive matter. To have a rest on preventive matter is important.
Okay, so that's a good thought. You rest before you're tired so that you can rest more
exactly
actively or productively. And so I guess it varies person by person, but you use the time roughly as an example of an hour and then a rest. Is that kind of the right recipe or duration?
Yeah, it really depends on what you want. For me, 1 hour is just enough. It can be 45 minutes, it can be 30 minutes, it can be 2 hours. It really depends. So for me, 1 hour is just enough to have a focus on something and then to have a rest.
And when it comes to resting, you know, you mentioned taking a walk or some of these other things. Are there any other key means of recuperating that are highly effective and efficient?
I love those walks. Yeah, walks are very, very good because it really can boost your cardiovascular system. So walks, then naps, of course. You can have like 15 to 20 minute nap, and naps are also very good in terms of productivity. It seems crazy that napping can boost your productivity, but it's true. There is a lot of scientific data about the fact that if you do one or two naps daily, your productivity is much higher than if you just do work for 12 hours in a row.
You know, I'm a big believer in napping, Peter, and I used to be the weirdo. When I worked in an office, I did, in fact, take naps, and I was the weird
that's
guy.
Great.
But I was like, I've got scientific data on my side, so this is enabling me to work better for you. You should be thanking me for napping, frankly. Cool. What anything else you want to make sure to mention before we shift gears and hear about some of your favorite things?
Yeah, for me, the core was to really find a purpose of what you do. I want to write another book about purpose at work because like 80% of my clients, I do one-on-one consulting, and 80% of my clients, they have struggles of finding purpose of what they do. Sometimes I call this corporate depression because it's a problem of people that are working in big corporations, but they don't see purpose of what they do. So finding purpose at work is very important, and it's a very important part of leadership to help people in your team to see purpose of what they do. So purpose, to me, is the key topics. And finding purpose for yourself and to ask yourself what is meaningful to you, how you can improve the world a bit, and so on. Those are key questions.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, now could you share with us a favorite quote, something you find inspiring?
Well, I really love the quote, if you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough. So I love simplicity. I love minimalism. I loved it even before it was cool. And to really explain things simply, it's my favorite thing, because we live in a very chaotic and very complex world. And simplicity is very good for decreasing our stress and stress hormone cortisol too. So that's why I love Japan. I go to Japan every year for 1 month. And for me, when I'm sitting in temples in Kyoto that are very simple, it makes me much more relaxed and without stress. So simplicity is a very good tool how to fight stress in this complex world.
Okay. And how about a favorite study or experiment or a bit of research?
Yeah, it's maybe the one about self-forgiveness. It's a quite new study that it shows that if you can forgive yourself, then you procrastinate less. Because people, if they can't forgive themselves, they have more regrets and they have much more negative feelings, and it can backfire again. So self-forgiveness is very good. For example, if you fail with something, just forgive yourself and start again, and don't blame yourself that much.
Okay, thank you. And how about a favorite book?
Oh, yeah, I love the book from Daniel Kahneman, Thinking Fast and Slow. It's a great book, and it was a very good source even for my book. But the problem is that the book is very complex and sometimes difficult to read. So, but the quality of the book is amazing. I saw Daniel Kahneman, I don't know, 1 month ago here in New York, and he's an incredible person. He's the founder of the modern decision-making science, so I love his book.
Thank you. And how about a favorite tool?
My favorite tool? It's a great question, too. I think that it's the habit list, the one that I covered in the discussion with you, because I use this tool for maybe now 5-6 years, and it really changed my life. It really changed my life because now I'm able to really change my habits, and I have a tool that I believe in, and it really works for me.
Well, now I'm going to ask about a favorite habit, but maybe since you've got a whole list of habits, can you give us the rundown? What all is in your habit list right now?
I can open my habit list and I can read it to you. So,
all right. So you've got it digitally.
Yeah, I have a digital one in my Excel table. And the first is cold shower. The second is exercise. Then I have one that is about overcoming my bad habit, and it's drinking tea, because I don't drink coffee. I only drink tea, so my limit is only one tea daily. And I used to drink like 3-4 teas, and there is a lot of caffeine there. So I want to get rid of this bad habit. So my limit is one green tea daily. Then I have alcohol. My limit is less than a half liter of wine.
You're from Czech Republic, right?
Right.
Are you on the Praha drinking team, perchance, Peter? When I visited, yeah. I saw tons of merch that said Praha drinking team. I thought that was funny.
Yeah. In Prague, like people usually drink a lot of beers. I like beer too, but for me, the wine is the issue. So my limit is 2 glasses of wine daily. Mm-hmm. So then I have a gym. It's a special column because the exercise column was the short morning exercise, and the gym is the longer one, 1 hour in the gym or to go running. And then I have a low carb diet. It means not to eat pizza. And the last column is to fill in my gratitude journal, to fill in 3 things that I'm grateful for daily. Mm-hmm. That's also a very cool habit to have.
And so now all of these are daily habits?
Yep. Oh, no. The gym is not a daily habit. All my habits are daily habits except gym. I want to go gym 3 times weekly.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, does the game change at all when both in terms of the habit list, how you're tracking it with the red or the green and the contiguous blocks, and in terms of behaviorally, like what do you do to install a habit that's not every day?
Well, then you really can mark those days that you don't have to do that, for example, with blue dot. So if you, want to do gym 3 times weekly, you put the green if you do that. If you don't have to, you put a blue one. And if you don't do it in a row for 1 week, then you put the red one. So
understood.
Right.
Okay. And then when you're actually doing a habit that's not every day, it seems like those could be harder to build and to take root. Do you have any tips for those?
Exactly. That's why I teach my clients to have daily habits. But sometimes, of course, you are unable to do it daily. For example, I play squash, and I have my friend that is playing the squash with me, and we do squash only once a week. So with this habit, it's very good to find a partner. Like it's much easier to you to do that because you don't want to cancel it in advance. So mm-hmm. if you have your buddy for sports, for exercise, it can really increase the chance that you really do that.
Oh, absolutely. I guess I'm just wondering. So if you know that you don't intend to go to the gym every day, but you want to make sure that that is a habit, how do you behaviorally lock that in?
Well, yeah, I love those apps that you really book the gym, and if you want to cancel, you pay some money for that. So it's also a good motivation. So I use app ClassPass, and if you don't go for a class, I think you pay, $20 or something. So it means that it can really force you to go.
Oh, gotcha. All right. And is there a particular nugget you share that really seems to connect and resonate with your readers and listeners?
Okay. What I really like is those random small acts of kindness. And it really, really resonates with my clients, because if you do 1 or 2 or 3 small random acts of kindness daily, it makes you much happier than if you buy a new iPhone or things like that. Because we have a data that we have a specific part of the brain that is activated when you do something for the others. So doing something selflessly can, in terms of happiness, can be much long-term than if you do something just selfish.
And if folks want to learn more, get in touch, where would you point them?
Okay. Well, part of my book is about this. And another good book is a book from Adam Grant that is called it calls Give and Take. It's a great book even for leadership, and Adam made a lot of research on the fact that in these days, if you are not taker but the giver, you can be much more successful.
And do you have a final challenge or call to action for folks seeking to be awesome at their jobs?
Okay, I think that's the final advice will be again about finding the purpose. Ask yourself what is important to you and how you can really help more your clients, how you can really help more your colleagues, or what you can do to really be proud on yourself during the workday.
All right. Thank you, Peter. This has been lots of fun. I wish you and the book, The End of Procrastination, tons of luck and keep doing the good work.
Thank you, Pete. It was a great discussion and you had a great question. Thank you very much.
I really loved how Peter was so gung-ho on the habit list. And it's true, I have experienced some of that, kind of combining lessons learned from Steve Robbins there in episode 440. I remember when I was in college, I had an accountability group and we would support each other and we would make these lists of habits that we are going to tackle. And sure enough, they grew and grew and grew as they became easy. So habits that were once hard were now sort of, well, habituated and just very simple to do, such that it grew to the point of about 16 different habits, anything from, you know, drinking enough water to doing a morning ritual to exercise to anything. So some took just a couple minutes and some took more, but it was so cool how they started hard and then got easier. And then it's like, dang, I'm doing a ton of good stuff regularly. So great stuff from Peter. I hope you dug that and more. Again, the show notes, the transcript, the links to items we reference are at awesomeatyourjob.com/ep443. If you haven't already, I hope you'll push subscribe. Our next episode is Memorial Day, so it's just a quick reflection from me. But after that, we got Stacey Engel. She is in charge of the organization Fierce Inc. They talk about fierce conversations, those difficult or awkward or uncomfortable or abandoned conversations that need to be had, how to have them. Peace.
Thanks for listening. To get the most out of the show, we recommend two key things. First, check out the extra resources at awesomeatyourjob.com. You can find this episode's transcript and links, as well as the perfect episode for your situation. You can search the full text transcripts of hundreds of episodes or explore episodes tagged by topic and competency covered. Second, subscribe to the podcast and get future episodes automatically. You can subscribe by telling Siri and several other smartphones and speakers, subscribe to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, or by tapping subscribe in your podcast player of choice. If you'd like some extra help figuring out podcasts and how subscriptions work, visit awesomeatyourjob.com/subscribe for guidance. Hope to catch you on the next episode of How to Be Awesome at Your Job.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.